Every first Friday, a little storefront in the crossroads becomes a tiny farmer's market. In February, that means a half dozen stalls selling things like root vegetables, pork, fresh baked bread, and carved wooden utensils. And there's live music to set the tone. A toddler cycles up and down the space as a few customers negotiate for their produce.
I'll try to do a radish and carry. Radish versus sprouts, okay?
The mood was a little bittersweet at Bad Seed last Friday. As the market begins to wind down, it's closing at the end of the month. The woman behind that enterprise, sometimes known as Farmer Brooke, is changing her focus to another enterprise. On this Friday, our portrait session is with Farmer Brooke, Brooke Salvaggio. Hi, Brooke.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. It's good to have you here.
Thank you.
So tonight will be the third to last Friday night farmer's market.
That is correct.
How are you feeling about that?
I'm sentimental. It was such a difficult decision for us to close down the market. But we also have a lot on our plates right now. So I'm just kind of trying to prepare myself for the next chapter. And I hope these last three markets, you know, I want to go out with a bang. I want to go out feeling really good about what we've done for the last 10 years.
Well, let's step back and get back to before those 10 years. In fact,
sure.
Let's step way back. You often talk about your coming to be an urban farmer and opening Bad Seed as the result of a long journey that began with being actually kind of a rebellious kid.
Absolutely.
Take us back. Where did you grow up?
So I grew up in, you know, Midwestern suburbia on the Johnson County side. And, I grew up like most typical suburban kids in a kind of upper middle class white family. You know, the vast mowed green lawn and the SUVs in the garage and, you know, food out of boxes, you know, microwaves, that sort of thing. And I was just really sort of unhappy. And at the time, I didn't understand why, but I didn't fit into all that. And I think when you're sort of misguided and confused and don't really understand, you know, at a very young age, I'm asking myself, like, what is the purpose of life? You know, what does this all mean? You know, I just, <That's>, right?
while eating your microwave
right,
TV dinners.
Right, while eating my, you know, Cheez-Its. Like, I think I could kill a box of Cheez-Its pretty fast back then. So, you know, when I became a teenager, naturally, you know, you just kind of rebel. I was a party girl. I think I did everything under the sun. I was just looking for answers. And I was also trying to find a way to let people know I was angry about the system at hand, you know, and of course, it was not productive.
Is this what you now know looking back on it? Or at the time, did you know how angry you were? Did you feel like you were being rebellious?
I knew that I was extremely angry. I did not have some sort of well-formed dialogue as to why. And I certainly didn't understand that I was unhappy with I didn't understand why I was unhappy with the culture,
and,
you know.
And why were you? I mean, what was it about suburbia and that life that didn't click with you?
You know, I don't know exactly what it is about me or what makes me different, but consumerism has always made me feel really empty, and I've always hated buying things, and we just, you know, I grew up in a culture where that's really what you did. You know, you aspired to be in a position where you could buy lots of stuff, and I was very unhappy in that context. It made me uncomfortable. And I also just, I'm a really sensitive person. Mm. And I was young and stupid, so I didn't understand that my actions were necessarily unethical, or I didn't understand why, but I think I felt it deep down, and that made me feel guilty. I mean, I always walked around with this sort of weird, like, suburban white girl sense of guilt, you know.
But you didn't know that's what it was.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, so
So you were a rebellious kid, but you
right.
stayed at home, And right. eventually you went off to school.
So eventually when I turned 18, I was involved in the fine arts, and art was a great outlet for me. You know, that really, I think that kept me alive during those really rough teenage years. And I got a good scholarship to an art school in Maryland, and I went for, you know, half a semester, and
enough time to really get to know.
Oh yeah,
so, yeah.
Promptly dropped out. I was freaked out by the fact that you know, the dormitories were in the Baltimore ghetto, and I think I was really experiencing the disparities and some of the sort of ugliness of race relationships for the first time in my life. And again, I did not have a dialogue for this, but I felt really funny being a middle-class white girl living off her parents' credit card while all this stuff was going on. And I was surrounded by all these, you know, punk rock art school kids who think they're, you know, just really cool. And we all think we're somehow like doing something good for the world
Yeah. I mean, can you think of a particular thing that happened while you were there that really stands out in your memory?
I just, you know, I remember not particular incidences necessarily, but just that feeling of, you know, these young white kids, and everyone's so uber cool, and they're just sort of existing and so not conscious of the environment around them, and so not conscious of the hardships and the disparities all around them. And we're just so absorbed in our egos. I think the ego thing was really hard for me. I wanted to escape my own ego. I mean, I was just like all those other kids, you know.
Well, that's what seems so interesting, is that you weren't any different from them,
right,
in terms of
absolutely
your upbringing.
Not. No.
So where did this come from? Like, where did that seed come from in you?
I don't know if there's some older part of me or something from another life, but I just needed to connect in a deeper way with my environment and with the world. And I was not finding that connection in any way, shape, or form with how I grew up or, you know, my situation in art school. I had trouble accepting that, you know, no matter how politically charged or conceptual this art I make may be, it's really not going to make the world better. Mm-hmm. It's really just a display of my ego, you know, ultimately.
So you dropped out.
So I dropped out of art school, and then I decided I would travel the world and go to older parts of the world and sort of search for the meaning of life. As cheesy as, you know, that sounds, but I was kind of dramatic. You know?
You're saying it in a way that makes it sound like you know that it sounds dramatic and cheesy.
Oh, I totally, and I'm still dramatic, but at least I know that I'm kind of epic and dramatic about things.
And did you discover the meaning of life as you traveled?
You know, I discovered dirt. You know, I discovered soil. For me, it was just amazing to go to older parts of the world where people were still relying on very basic things. They were relying on the fertility of the soil to produce food so that they could survive.
So where's one of the places you went?
So I first went to Peru, and I traveled with a friend that I knew from Kansas City, but he was actually Peruvian. Both his parents were originally from Peru. So he had some family connections in some very tiny villages there. And, you know, when we arrived in these tiny villages with no electricity, they slaughtered a goat for us, you know, upon arrival. These are people who do not eat meat very often. It's only for special occasions. And you know, they would work these long hours in the fields, and then they'd stay up all night around the campfire and play music and dance and chant, and they were just the happiest people I'd ever seen.
And they didn't have microwavable TV dinners.
No, they had nothing. You know, they plowed with small oxen, and they their clothes were extremely tattered. The children were so sunburned that their faces were like bubbling and peeling, but it wasn't unhealthy. It was just their life, you know? Mm-hmm.
Why do you feel like there was a connection with these people, even though you were so different?
I think for the first time in my life, I just felt, I felt kind of grounded and at peace. And then that feeling, I mean, I think, you know, then I was still, that was still very eye-opening to me. But I did like not having a bunch of stuff and just being simple. I liked being kind of dirty and not worrying about vanity so much. And just the lifestyle I really enjoyed. I loved being out in nature, you mm-hmm. know. I loved just being outside.
And do I understand you did farming in these places you visited?
Yeah, I did. I didn't farm in Peru, but after that kind of set the travel bug for me, that were sparked the travel bug, I should say. And after that, I traveled to other places, and in order to fund my travels, I worked on organic farms in exchange for room and board through a kind of an international organization called WOOF. It's Woofing, Willing Working on Organic Farms. And I purely did that as a means to travel on a shoestring, and more for the cultural exchange of staying with the families and getting to know the real people. But through those experiences, you know, you're working about 30 hours a week in a field, and doing whatever the farm family needs done. And so through those experiences, I got to just get my hands in the soil and be out there for hours in the hot sun and, you know, sweat it out. I loved it. Like that just changed me. I was like, wow, this feels so good. This feels so much better than all the drugs I ever did and mm-hmm. all the stuff I ever bought and all the jobs I've ever had. You know?
Okay. So what I don't understand then is, why did you come back to Kansas City
right,
at all?
Right. No, you know, that I went through this phase then in my early 20s, that anti-America phase, like hardcore, like I'm going to be an expat. I'm never going to live in the States again. You know, when you start referring to, you know, America as the States, you know, I was kind of in that mode. And I thought I'd, you know, marry some exotic Brazilian and I'd start a farm in Sardinia and grow figs and raise goats. And, you know, I had very romantic ideas about my farm and this life I was going to lead.
But,
you know, and I hung on to that for a long time. And then I at the age of 24, I just, you know, I had bounced around a lot. I'd traveled a lot. I'd lived in San Francisco for a while. And got really into organic food culture there. And I at some point decided, okay, I'm in a transitional phase. You know, I'm going to go back to Kansas City, spend some time with my family, reconnect with my own roots a little bit, maybe for a few years, do some sort of organic farming project there, urban farming project, and then I will take off again and fulfill my ultimate fantasy. So I never intended to stay. It was supposed to be sort of a 2 to 3 year
kind of check in with the
yeah,
family
just
and then
check
move
in,
on.
You know, yeah. I'm okay. Yeah. And get my feet wet and have a garden and that sort of thing.
And you did have a garden.
Oh,
but
I
it
had
was
a garden.
More of a garden than most of us have.
Big garden. Yeah.
So what did you do?
So I started the moment I moved back, I started renting the Bad Seed storefront from my grandpa at the time for very little money a month. And I was living down there in this kind of live work space environment.
And we should say Bad Seed is in the Crossroads.
And Bad Seed
it's
is
McGee
in the
Street.
Crossroads. Yeah. Yeah. It's on McGee Street. And back then, you know, the Crossroads is, especially the East Crossroads, is getting more developed now, finally. But back then it was a ghost town. You know, the yeah. only time there were bodies down there was on First Fridays. It was literally a ghost town. So I was living there, and then kind of unbeknownst to my grandpa, my poor grandpa, who lived, he lives in South KC at about 95th and Bannister. He has a 2.5 acre residential lot, which is, you know, you can imagine it's huge. It's about an acre in front and an acre and a half in back. And I freaking ripped up his backyard and started this massive garden. I eventually got chickens. I got goats. I was totally homesteading out there. And then in addition to that, I was going to several farmers markets a week. And it was my income. It was my food, and it was also all of my supplemental income. It helped me pay rent. I saved money, and I just I just dove headfirst into this sort of homesteading, mini farming, renegade, you know, growing lifestyle. And it was Yeah, it was a fun time. It was by far the wildest thing I had done, really.
were you still single then?
So I was. I mean, I had boyfriends. I was still kind of in my young hip stage. I'm not so young and hip now, but
well, hip is in the eye of the beholder.
Right, I mean, right.
You seem hip enough.
So, but then so I ran Bad Seed Farm. And simultaneously the Bad Seed Market, which at the time was more of like this sort of colorful, artistic happening every Friday night where this freaky girl was selling eggplant. There were musicians around and, you know, there were artists, and it was not a legitimate farmer's market, I'll put it that way. Right. So I did that for several years. And then I met Dan, who is my husband today. And, He at the time was interning on another urban farm in the area, now known as Cultivate Kansas City and the Gibbs Road Farm, which they're a pretty well-known not-for-profit that does lots of great stuff around here. So he was interning there, and he was the only other person I had, you know, met at my age, you know, who was into the same things as me. And then eventually, you know, long story short, we had this crazy urban farming romance, but long story short, he joined me in 2009 on Bad Seed Farm, and we started farming there together.
Well, we're going to take a break, and we're going to leave it right there at Bad Seed Farm, but go from there. And when Central Standard returns, we'll continue this portrait session with Brooke Salvaggio and how that love of the land and of growing things led her first to Bad Seed Farm and then to an even bigger farm, and to really be at the forefront of the local and organic food movement in Kansas City, all while still in her 20s. I'm Brian Ellison. Stick around. It's portrait session day on Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison, and we are talking with Brooke Salvaggio. She's the owner of Bad Seed, the farmer's market, and sort of the hub for urban farmers and the local organic food movement in Kansas City. It's closing at the end of this month, and we're taking this chance to talk with Brooke about how she and Bad Seed got here. We were talking about the farm of that name, but tell us about the space where you did open up the store. How did it become what it is today from being a place where you were living initially?
Right, right. So Bad Seed's had kind of a fun evolution. But yeah, it did start out as essentially me opening up my living room every Friday night, you know, like hawking veggies that I grew in my big garden and trying to get people excited about that, which, you know, was in some ways sort of absurd. But then, you know, over time, it really evolved into an extremely legitimate farmers market and food hub of sorts. It took a while for people to take me seriously, especially the farming community. I mean, at the time I had, you know, a blonde mohawk. I wore red lipstick in the field while working, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I was not your typical farm girl.
But you were, for all anyone knew, a typical urban farm girl.
Absolutely.
Because there weren't any, right?
Yeah, and it worked for what I was trying to do with Bad Seed, kind of create this funky, fun renegade farmers market, I guess, in a way that stylistically worked, and it got unlikely people interested in what we were trying to do.
It had a cult following makes
absolutely.
It sound small, but it was a very devoted following.
Absolutely,
right?
And I call it a cult following. Absolutely, you know, it was you know, over time it went from certainly this cultish, crazy, fun, colorful thing to still this crazy, fun, colorful, cultish thing. But at the same time, it was just an awesome market with such legitimate products and such legitimate growers and such a wide range of local foods that you really couldn't find in one place anywhere else.
I mean, was anyone else doing this? What was the organic food scene,
you know,
like at that time?
There were not nearly as many farmers markets then, at least not organic markets. You know, the Brookside Farmers Market has been the longest standing organic market, and that's a very legitimate certified organic market on Saturday mornings at 63rd and Brookside. But that's also, I mean, it's a bit of a hoity-toity market. You know, not everyone feels comfortable there. Not everyone can meet those price points. And I'm not saying Bad Seed is cheap. I mean, local organic food It costs more. I mean, you pay for what you get. I'll put it that way.
Yeah.
But so, you know, Brookside was kind of the only option. And you could call that kind of a white tent market that maybe wasn't going to attract, you know, all demographics. Right. So
what was it about Bad Seed that did attract those demographics?
You know, I think Bad Seed was sort of, it was more than a farmer's market with good organic ethical products that people could feel good about buying. It was almost like, you know, you were part of something when you walked in. You were part of a movement. You were part of a community. And that's what was so special about that place. And I don't really know how that energy came to be. Maybe it was the ambiance. Maybe it was the colors I painted the walls. Maybe it was the personalities in there. Maybe it was all of that. Maybe it was just my sheer, you know, honesty and love that I put into it. You know, there was nothing really put on about it. I mean, it was really just an expression of my personality and love for food and culture.
And meanwhile, you were not just the proprietor of this market.
Right.
You were still very much a farmer.
Right.
And in fact, you took your farm to an even bigger setting.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, yeah. The beast. Yeah. So all along the way, I was kind of the main vegetable producer at the market. And there were other vegetable producers, too. But, you know, sort of the backbone of the market was the food that I was producing. And then Dan and I were collectively producing together. And, you know, in our heyday on Bad Seed Farm, we were producing, you know, maybe $30,000 worth of vegetables a year on a very small space, which we thought was very significant at the time. Now things have evolved a lot. But today, we have a 13.5 acre farm known as Herbivore Urban Farm. And we are on the east side of town. We're basically 5 miles east of here. Herbivore
is spelled U-R-B-A.
Right. Yeah, herbivore, which some people don't get, but it's supposed to be this, you know, play on words.
Mm-hmm.
Dan and I pretty much eat 100% urban grown diet from our farm. We are true herbivores.
So you don't buy any food?
We hardly buy food. We buy a handful of products from like Nature's Own grocery store, like organic whole wheat pasta and dried beans and bananas for my 4-year-old, you know, that sort of thing,
right.
But very limited.
How did you make that move from your grandfather's yard, basically, to this 13 acre place out in the east?
Well, so it's always so loaded. Anything that has to do with Bad Seed or herbivore is always so much more loaded than it needs to be. But
what do you mean?
But basically, so Bad Seed, we do live up to the name. Back in 2009, I think that's when it all started, we started getting sort of attacked by our neighbors. There was this, it's a long story, so to sum it up, basically there was this perception amongst the white middle class neighborhood that we were in, and you got to remember we were on the Missouri side, but we butted right up to Johnson County, and the neighbors felt that the existence of an organic garden or farm or whatever you want to call it was going to bring down property values.
You mentioned there were chickens and goats.
Yeah, there were well contained, gorgeous chickens and a few goats. So yeah, I mean, you know, you can imagine.
You do hear how it
sure.
sounds. Right?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. God, yeah, I've been defending myself for so many years. Yeah, no, you can picture this really kind of poopy, smelly, white trash, you know, backyard for sure. I mean, absolutely, right? Or you can picture this bucolic garden and an ecosystem that we'd created. And frankly, it was the latter. And anyone who visited will tell you that. And people, you know, that was always, Dan and I had a reputation for being flawless, you know, in what we did and how we grew food. And that, you know, that's a well-earned reputation. You know, our place was immaculate. I can't say that today about my 13.5 acre site that I'm, you know, we're building from scratch, but the little Bad Seed farm was immaculate, you know?
Yeah.
So it was really, you know, and a lot of these neighbors that felt this way had never really seen the gardens.
Yeah.
You know?
And yet you felt compelled to move.
So it got extremely ugly. I think it's urban agriculture is loaded. You know, I think people should understand that it's really not about beans and tomatoes so much. It's about property values. There's racism. There's a lot of discrimination. There's a lot of classism that comes into play. You know, to put it into context, and this is like the thing I remember most out of that whole saga when the neighbors were, you know, kind of attacking us and teaming up with the city to shut down our little farm and garden. You know, the president of the neighborhood association at that time told Dan that, you know, the presence of our garden was going to bring property values and allow poor Black families to move into the neighborhood. And that wow. that statement just, I mean, that crushed me. That I feel like that's when I talk about how I'm more jaded now in my 30s. I feel like that was the statement that put me on the path of like, you know, wow, humanity kind of sucks, you know?
I'm really struck at the way these issues arise out of farming. I mean,
yeah,
it all for you is about this agricultural world, and yet
right.
you go as an art student and you see poverty and these stories of race and socioeconomic yeah. differences are all intertwined.
They are. It's so weird. These socioeconomic differences and this racial piece for me is somehow at the core of everything I do. It's at least it's what I think about when I'm weeding turnips or planting beets. I mean, I'm thinking about these issues, you know. I don't really know. I mean, I do know why. I get why it's connected, but it is crazy that it's such a common thread.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to invite our listeners into this portrait session. If you've been a customer or a vendor at Bad Seed, maybe if you've seen Brooke in action somewhere along the way and want to talk with her about this moment in her life and what it means for our community, give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 235-2888. You can also tweet at us. We're at KCURCST. Brooke Salvaggio, you are moving on from Bad Seed. One of the things about the space that a lot of folks have noticed, it's been written about a little bit, is the fact that you have a new neighbor there,
right.
Papa John's, which moved in a couple of years ago into the very same building, that your parents own,
yes.
right?
Yes.
How did you find out that was going to happen?
So that again, you know, another loaded piece of Bad Seed. So, you know, I've been renting now from my parents for almost 10 years. My grandpa left the building to them. It's been in our family for a long time. It's got a very rich history. I guess this was, yeah, it's been about 2 years ago now. Prior to that, the tenant next door to me had always been some sort of local business, you know. And as we know, like, local businesses come and go a lot. People try to make things work. It's hard. Papa John's came into the picture, you know.
Tell us about the moment when you found out that was going to happen.
Oh gosh, I can't remember the moment. There were a few prospective tenants at the time, Papa John's being one of them, and I remember when my parents, you know, told me that they'd been approached by Papa John's, and you know, they were kind of like swept up by them in a way. It was like, oh, here's this corporate entity that will sign this extremely long lease. They will pay really good money for the space. You know, you can understand on a business level how that would have been very, very attractive to, you know, an owner of a building. And then, of course, me, who does not see things in terms of money or business, was just horrified. I mean, I couldn't imagine, you know, A, just my feelings about corporate fast food, as everyone can imagine, you know, on so many ethical levels, I have a problem with that. And then beyond that, that was the first fast food joint in the Crossroads. I mean, I believe I'm correct on that. I'm not aware of another one.
And it opened up next to your place.
And it opened up next door. And, you know, of course, like, that was hard on my relationship with my parents, and it was hard just renting from my parents in general. And we've always had a tough relationship, and they love me, I love them, but you know, most people know that family stuff is tough. You mm-hmm. know, we'd all be lying if we said it wasn't. Mm-hmm. So I'm no different than anyone else, but that was particularly hard, you know, yeah. for many reasons, but also then the pitch at some point published, it was just a little online article, and who knows how many people read it, but I certainly got it forwarded to me by a billion people, but they published this article, and I can't even remember, maybe it was Stretch or some Crossroads personality saying that I, you know, Brooke Savaggio, the organic goddess, had rented to Papa John's as if I owned the building and made the decision. And so, and you know how those online articles go, you know, then people post comments. And I just read all these horrible comments about, you know, about myself
that were based on something that wasn't
right,
true.
Based on something that wasn't true. And heck, I would have felt the same exact way if I had been the reader, but you know, it was embarrassing and hurtful. And, it just added another layer of contempt for me about the whole Papa John's situation.
Is your relationship with your parents, does it get worse and worse as a result of that sort of thing? Or
that was a really dark time, I feel like. And you know, again with family, you know how things kind of go in waves. Like things will boil up out of control, and then you'll kind of have a downtime. And you know, I think we've been working on this relationship for years, and we'll continue to work on it. And there's been a lot of things where you think like, oh gosh, that's a deal breaker, you know, mm-hmm. but they're your family and there's really no deal breaker, you know. Mm-hmm. So that was just a tough time. And I try to see both sides of the story. I try to understand that the taxes are high on the building. I try to remember that they've given me a good rental rate over the last 10 years. I try to be appreciative and thankful. But I'm also just a passionate, angry person who really puts my ethics first all the time. And that was rough.
Yeah, I can only imagine.
Yeah.
Well, Central Standard needs to take another break. We'll continue this portrait session with Brooke Savaggio and talk about what's next for her and for her family. We'll also offer you a plan for your Valentine's Day weekend. I'm Brian Ellison. Stay with us. Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison, in for Gina Kaufman. In a little while, we offer some last-minute help if your Valentine's weekend plans haven't quite come together. But first, we're talking with Brooke Savaggio about her life and her family, and about Bad Seed, the farmer's market she's run since 2007 in the Crossroads that is closing in just a couple of weeks. Brooke, how does shutting down something like the market work? It's all local fresh food. You don't have a lot of inventory to liquidate, I guess.
Right. It's very tricky. Beyond housing the market every Friday night, Bad Seed was, you know, I sum it up as a green event space of sorts. So we hosted all sorts of farm-to-table events, urban homesteading classes, various things. And then more importantly, Bad Seed served as housing for our apprentices. So it allowed Dan and I to have, you know, about 75 hours of labor a week on herbivore. And we fed them and we paid them a stipend and we housed them at the Bad Seed Market. Wow. So it had, you know, sort of a separate apartment type of thing going on there. And then beyond that, it was all the infrastructure that our current farm lacks. Herbivore, when we bought it, was 13 and a half acres of completely raw land. No water, no fencing, no electricity, no nothing. So Bad Seed has been our barn. It is our walk-in cooler. It is our storage space. It's where we do a lot of post-harvest stuff. So removing Bad Seed from the equation is very, very tricky. And we have a lot of scrambling ahead of us to sort of make up for its absence. And then on a very practical business level, it's where we sold 80% of what we grow, you know.
Yeah. So I guess the obvious question is, why are you closing?
Right.
You've given
right.
every reason why you shouldn't
I've
be.
Given a lot of great reasons why we shouldn't close. You know, sometimes life just explodes on you. And I feel like life has been exploding on us for a long time, but we've hung on. You know, I should say that these are all choices we made, so I'm not feeling sorry for myself. But that said, we've had a pretty tough road. You know, we've been running a business, two businesses essentially, building a farm, running a farm production, attempting to raise a child holistically and be engaged in that process. We have been spread so thin for so many years. It's been, you know, hugely hard on our marriage and just our personal lives. I mean, we don't have personal lives, but it's just been a really tough process. And herbivore, you know, I haven't talked about that much, but it is a beast, and it truly consumes every waking moment of our lives. Farming in the way that we farm and building a farm from scratch is a huge endeavor.
Do you still feel as close to the land? Do you still feel that same excitement you talked about when you first went to Peru? Is it the same still?
You know, it is... There are days where I'm out in my field by myself in the late afternoon when the sun's setting, and those feelings are there, you know, 200%. And I have these really magical moments on the farm, I'd say at least several times a week. And those moments are what carry the incredible struggle that I kind of experience on a more daily, hourly basis.
Yeah. Yeah.
But really the reason behind closing is the fact that we are stretched so thin, and then mainly that we found out that we're having another child. In August, we found out, and it was a big surprise, you know, I'm pregnant. And this was totally unplanned and totally left field and couldn't have been further from what we'd imagined. We were just getting over the hump with our first child, which was also unplanned. I mean, I joke that Dan and I were the poster children for local and organic, but we really ought to be the poster children for unplanned pregnancy. We're on number two. And this is coming from people who are these staunch environmentalists who feel that procreation is not like necessarily that responsible in this day and age.
But here you are.
Here I am.
How old is your son?
So my son is 4. And yeah, here we go again. And it makes me sound like I don't love my child or my child to be. And of course I do. I mean, we pour ourselves into parenting and doing it right. But it's a lot.
Life is pretty full.
Life is full. And so this new baby kind of, yeah.
Well, I mean, there's a lot that has changed since you first got into this business, too.
Absolutely.
There's a lot more attention now to locally grown food. Many more chains even built around organic foods. They're opening stores here in Kansas City all the time.
Right. Absolutely. Does
that feel to you like success as a leader in that movement here in Kansas City?
You know, because I know this business well and I'm the real deal, I have to call a spade a spade. And I don't think that a lot of what's happening is legitimate or true to the movement that at least I pour my heart into. So, you know, part two of why Bad Seed is closing, you know, mainly it's for the reasons that I just outlined. But there is the fact that our customer base has just taken a nosedive since 2013. And what was a thriving, amazing market with lines out the door is, you know, there are nights where we have, you know, 30 people in there and farmers are walking away with $45 in their pockets. And, you know, I have to ask myself, is this viable? Now, it was still viable for me as a grower. I have a really, really dedicated customer base there, and I can move a lot of high-quality produce. But the market as a whole, I felt, was really suffering, and I didn't know if I wanted to kill myself over something that I felt like the public was no longer, you know, making the sacrifice to support. You know, the farmers are sacrificing themselves every day in and day out, to grow food this way and provide it for the community. And we're not getting rich. You know, it's not an easy life. And I just didn't feel like we were getting the same love in return. And then to answer your question, you know, I recognize that local food is a huge fad now, and it's a trend, and it's hot, and it's on everybody's radar, and buying local, period, not just food, but t-shirts and merchandise and, you know, all of it. But I think it's, I really think it's largely hypothetical, you know?
You sound a little hurt by it.
Right, sure.
I mean, is that fair?
I'm, you know, like I said, I'm a really honest and sensitive person. And, you know, when I detect a BS factor, you know, I take that seriously. And there is a ton of greenwashing going on right now. There are so many corporate entities that are trying to take our little piece of the small scale organic pie. And, you know, it pisses me off, and people buy into it, and that's unfortunate.
Yeah. Are you still an idealist? I mean, has some of that broken down with life and reality?
Oh, you know, absolutely. I'd be lying if I said that I wasn't like one of the most jaded people that I know. but at the same time, it doesn't, although it may sort of flavor my personality, it does not phase my actions in the least. I still pour 200% into what I believe in every day, you know, in my field, in my newsletters, in my relationships with customers. So
tell me what will happen with the farm, with Herbivore. Will it continue just as it has? Where will you sell your food?
So Herbivore will continue. I mean, we are so deep into this process of building this passive solar, you know, off-grid edible oasis of sorts. I mean, it's a pretty wild situation out there, what we've got going on and what we're attempting to do. So Herbivore will continue to evolve, but we will, you know, definitely be able to focus on the farm fully and our family and try to strike a balance there, because that's so important. And that's really what's, you know, killing us, feeling like, okay, we do not have a balanced life and it's not healthy. So we will scale back our production for this next year. We'll scale back the vegetables by about 50% to reflect the fact that a farmer is giving birth in April and will suddenly be MIA for God knows how long. And
which is not an ideal timing.
It's terrifying. Yeah. But so we will scale back initially. That's not to say that we won't have a ton of food every week. We will. We have about 5 acres in orchards. We have tons of specialty perennial crops. We'll still be doing a good amount of vegetables. We have about 200 laying hens. You know, we have things are, you know, in the works.
Things will keep getting produced.
Yeah.
And when you look a little further down the horizon, beyond this next year, beyond maybe even the next 5 or 10 years, kids are a little older,
right?
When you've had a few years away from this,
right?
Do you have any idea what else you'd like to try?
So we would really, you know, we are fascinated by ecosystems and integrating various ecosystems, and we are fascinated by the collaboration of plants and animals and how they interact. So we would really like to integrate more livestock into our production. And really start producing pasture-based meats and more animal products, and in unison with all of the fruits and vegetables that we currently produce.
All right. So we haven't heard the last from Brooke Salvaggio.
No.
And
no, not at all.
Well, that is all the time we have with Brooke for this portrait session. Portrait sessions are our regular in-depth interviews with the most interesting people in Kansas City, and you have been that today. Thank you so much for being here, Brooke.
You are welcome. Thank you for having me.
Best wishes to you.
Thank you.
Those portrait sessions, by the way, are paired with some beautiful photographic portraits. Today's portrait is taken by KCUR's Julie Deneche. You'll be able to see photos of Brooke and hear this interview again, too, online at kcur.org later today. In just a moment, how to spend your Valentine's weekend.